Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. Ty Hildebrand here, Dan Rubenstein over there. In dreary New York. Is it dreary in New York City?
You know, today it's actually a little bit warmer. I haven't been outside, but my weather widget a few minutes ago told me it was in the 50s.
Okay.
Which I've learned to accept as warm.
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
is, it is weird.
It is.
But
it is.
I'm going home-ish to LA this weekend, so I'll be able to update you and or anybody who cares to look at the Solid Verbal Twitter feed with how warm it is there, which I assume it's warmer, but New York is good. I've had to deal with, we've taken a little bit of a break to just regroup after the season. I've been struggling with the cold, tie.
Yeah, no, this has been very apparent to me.
It's when I see something that says 11, but feels like zero.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I realize that there are no degrees to be had outside.
Yeah.
It's troubling. I forgot to where I walked 15, 20 minutes to meet my brother for dinner down by the water here in New York, which is obviously colder and windier by the water. Forgot my beanie. You know, wearing a coat, scarf, gloves, but no beanie. My face hurts.
Yeah, yeah, it'll happen.
Not like it was cold and it was like cold needles. It was like my muscles started to freeze and it hurt to move my eyebrows.
Yeah, I know how that is.
That's not a sensation that they tell you about when you move to New York.
No, it isn't. And here's my only point on this. And I hate the
yes.
cold, too. I'm not cold. No, no one's a fan of sub-freezing temperatures. Let's be honest. Could almost go for more cold. Just a little bit more of, like, the really cold temperatures, if only to kill the bugs. Because
yeah.
if it doesn't come around now and freeze them out and do whatever it biologically does to them, it's going to be like last summer where the bugs come summertime, swarm you, and try to eat you alive. So that's really the
bad.
Only benefit to it that I can see. Otherwise,
you know who the cold is good for? Which lobby? Big Coco.
Yeah, well, that's true, right?
The Big Coco lobby is loving this. Follow the chocolate, Ty. I've always said that.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So, all right, you're not enjoying the cold. I'm not enjoying the shoulder. We talked about that. We're not going to go into any more details. Someone actually wrote to me and said I talk too much about my shoulder, so I'm not going to talk about
that. I don't
think
you talk enough about your shoulder.
Well,
what has been the hardest daily part of your routine with your shoulder?
Putting on socks.
Get as graphic as need be.
Putting on socks. How do you do it with one hand?
That is tough.
I think I figured something out today. I think I've my shoulder's hanging on by a thread.
Did somebody really say to stop talking about your shoulder?
Someone said we spent 10 minutes last show talking about shoulder stuff, and a gentleman by the name of Howard on our Facebook page.
Here's what I'm going to say. Howard.
Yes, Howard.
I've never heard that name before. This is not just the Solid Verbal generic college football talk. This is the Solid Verbal with Ty Hildebrand and Dan Rubenstein.
That's right. We are personalities.
Ty Hildebrand is a human with human ligaments, at least at the moment, until we can all get gorilla ligaments.
This is true. Yeah, and they may not be attached in the arm anymore. We're going to find that out on Friday. And I'm sure people will be riveted
yes.
when I tell the story umpteen more times as I'm recovering over the next 5 months or so. So
are you going under the knife, probably?
It's looking that way. I got
right.
the MRI yesterday. And you should have seen this scene here, Dan.
Right.
I got the CD with the MRI results on it.
Feel free to fast forward right now, by the way.
Right. No, I got the MRI results.
On-demand audio.
I asked for the CD because I don't know who's going to operate on me. I took suggestions.
Right.
So many people were very gracious with their suggestions. Thank you. I don't know where I'm going for this. I got the CD and I'm at home. I'm thinking, I could probably put this in a computer and,
do it
and work some shit out here. And I can figure out what's going on with the shoulder.
Right.
So I did. I popped it in the computer and I had no idea what I was looking at. But now this is sort of ushered in an era where I'm trying to find out way too much information way too early on in the process.
So what is specifically on the CD? Is this video? Is this just like
it's
the
not
images?
Video. It's the images from the MRI, and it has like an application included with the CD so that you can actually view the images. So I'm looking at my arm upside down, from behind, from the side. I mean, it's really cool what they're
right.
doing with magnetic resonance imaging nowadays.
Right.
But I still have no idea what I'm looking at. It was just, I'm trying to figure this out piecemeal. And it's probably all for naught because I'm going to go to the doc on Friday and he's going to tell me pretty much everything I need to know in order to make an informed decision. But
I'm going to bring this back to college football.
Please do.
For you, Howard, Howie, if you go under the knife and you're able to get video of your surgery, whatever that is, can you get video? I know my dad had shoulder surgery and he got video of it. They cleaned up all a bunch of scar tissue, and I saw like the machine that went in there.
I would love to watch that video.
I want to get video.
I'd post that on YouTube.
One of the things I love doing, if you've ever been to solidverbal.com, is editing together some college football funniness on video, some mashup-y kind of stuff. I want to get video of your shoulder surgery, and I want to mash that up with a Colt McCoy mixtape. And I want to see how well it does.
Can we throw Bryant Manise in there? Because I made the joke.
Oh.
I made that joke again when I went to the orthopedic doctor, and he didn't get it. I didn't expect he would, but
well, that's tough.
You know, I made the Bryant Manise arm strength joke, and maybe I'm the only one who thinks it's funny. I don't know. I watched him throw.
People just like you saying Bryant Manise.
I don't know. Well, anyway, we're gonna talk the Big Ten this evening with
B1G,
a gentleman we've wanted to have on the podcast for a while, Ramsey Nasrallah from 11 Warriors. .com. I'm going to stop by. Talk Ohio State. I want to have more of a Big Ten discussion with him. Ramsey's a bright man. I want to have a Big Ten discussion, not so much this bullet point questions business. So I have prepared a few talking points for the Legends division.
Yeah, we'll Ramsey came by the SB Nation studio to be – he is a member of the College Football Northeast Illuminati Intelligentsia. Yeah.
Right.
Good dude. This is New Jersey, I think. But yeah, 11 Warriors, of course, one of the preeminent Ohio State venues for knowledge online. But smart dude. Love to hear the Big Ten insight. It's a weird conference right now. I don't know how there's a better way to say weird conference.
Yeah,
I
was looking through it, and I want to ask Ramsey, but especially with the Legends division.
Yeah.
It feels like all the teams in that division have peaked. You know, like I can't see Nebraska getting that much better under Bo Pelini that they're just going to blow me away.
I do have breaking news.
Breaking news. Okay.
Wisconsin just had a 63-yard touchdown run against Nebraska. Again, it's January, what, 30th?
Yeah.
This is getting ugly.
Or he just never stopped running from
the
Big Ten championship.
It's Indianapolis. He just made it to Tupelo, Mississippi.
Yeah.
He's just now getting there.
It was a bit of a bloodletting there in the Big Ten championship. But
yeah, Monte Ball's going to be in great shape, though, for the combine.
Sure. I just don't feel like any of those teams on that side of the division, maybe save for Michigan. Michigan, to me, is the one that I look at and I say, all right, I could see them going places. And I like Northwestern, but I'm just not sold on them doing much better than they did this year. By the way, a great season for Northwestern, no doubt. But I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Maybe it's the stigma that others have portrayed of the Big Ten, that it seeped into my brain, and now that's kind of my perception. But
here's why I think a lot of it is fair.
Yeah.
Granted, with the seasons that, you know, Illinois had, Indiana had, not Indiana as much, Illinois and Iowa had, I think, for whatever reason, Iowa was playing games at times where a lot of people had nothing else to do. We're like, oh, let's see what's going on with Iowa. Oh, God, why?
Yeah.
I remember there was an Iowa game on when I was flying somewhere in late November. I forget. It was Iowa-Nebraska that was the really ugly game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Horrible game.
And I think that was just representative for fair and unfair reasons of the Big Ten season. And yeah, Michigan getting boat race early on against Alabama did not help things on the national stage. But Not a pretty year to be in the Big Ten.
All right. Well, let's talk to Ramsey Nasrallah again from 11warriors.com joining us now on the phone. Ramsey, how are you?
A long-time listener, first-time caller.
We're long-time fans.
Yeah.
We are ourselves Warriors.
Aren't we all? And who's not a Warrior anymore is Illinois. They're without a chief.
They are without a chief. We were talking about this before we hit record. They've taken now this plight to get a new logo or a new mascot or whatever they're doing. They've taken this now to the internet, right? They're going to be holding an internet vote of some sort.
People decide.
I mean, it's the democratic way to go at it, right?
For the land of Lincoln, I can think of no more appropriate way than to assemble a team of rivals to choose 1 liter. And I think we were going to decide on Colonel.
I just like the play on words with Colonel for me. And it just looks like an angry ear of corn. Nebraska might have something to say about that, but for me, it does the trick. I'm okay with Colonel.
My beloved conference brought in Nebraska recently, but no one has a stranglehold on corn. If you drive from one end of the current Big Ten to the other, you don't really, I think you go 7 minutes at one point without seeing corn.
I was going to say, it's all corn in the Big Ten, right?
It's pretty much all corn, yeah, and soybeans.
I like Colonel because I like puns, but here's what I'm going to throw into the mix that I just thought of because puns are now acceptable. What about Chief Alina Wreck, and it's a train that is off the rails, and it's just Tim Beckman shrugging in the foreground? That's all I have.
I don't see why we can't have different mascots for Illinois depending on the weekend, sort of the way that they do alternate jerseys.
It's a shame it didn't go better for Ron Zook, because if he were still there and if they were playing well, they could just use that picture of him water skiing.
That's a pretty amazing thing.
Oh, water skiing Ron Zook.
That's like Whistler's mother in terms of iconic imagery.
Indeed, indeed. All right, well, let's get into the Big Ten. We bring you on, of course, to talk all things Big Ten. Of course, 11warriors.com is an Ohio State site. I guess we'll start there. I mean, is it a stomach punch to go 12-0 and you can't play for a title? How did that go over with you and other Ohio State fans?
It's a bit of a challenge psychologically. You think about this happening, you know, when you get the bowl ban, December of 2011, like watch them go undefeated and not get to do anything with it. And then you start to realize it's kind of like, you know, the billionaire's tax problem. Oh no, we're undefeated. We can't go to a bowl game and beat Michigan and all the things that you grow up hoping to do with the exception of, you know, landing in Pasadena. As the season wore on and you started to see them actually improving, from having one of the most atrocious defenses I think I've seen since the lost season of 1999, you started to realize, you know, 12-0 was a possibility. And I think that there were several weeks where people started to prepare themselves for the idea that they would beat Michigan, storm the field, and then walk off of it forever and not have the opportunity to see them go play Stanford or whomever. I think they would have played Notre Dame, actually.
Yeah.
Which I think we were spared that. But I think there was some mental preparation that went into it. Does it stink in hindsight? Well, yeah, it's the sixth time Ohio State's gone undefeated in like 100 and some years of football. It doesn't happen all that often.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a great outcome. Now, I'd imagine the battle raged on in your comment threads and probably in some of your posts as well, but What seems to be the consensus? Would Ohio State have beaten Alabama or Notre Dame if it came to that?
I think Ohio State would have had a really good shot at beating Notre Dame. If Notre Dame played the way that they played that night,
right,
they definitely would have beaten Notre Dame. I don't think Ohio State would have had as much of a problem with Alabama as Notre Dame did, but I don't think they would have beaten Alabama either. There's the whole give Urban Meyer, you know, how many weeks to prepare, and my memory isn't that short. I remember what happened when Urban played Ohio State a few years ago. No matter how much I spend on trying to forget what happened in that Glendale BCS title game, but from a personnel standpoint, they're not there yet. I don't think they'll be there this year either. That doesn't mean they can't win the title, because you don't have to be the best team to win the title. But they're not where Urban Meyer wants them to be. And as far as this year goes, they caught a break not playing Alabama. They don't have the depth.
All right, and when you look at this Ohio State team moving forward, of course, spring ball, I guess, just in a few weeks, but what is it that you are encouraged by going forward outside of the 12-0 record, but just within the vacuum of the team, and what do you still sort of, what keeps you awake at night when you think about Ohio State moving forward?
Part of the angst of the Tressel era, and this is another billionaire's tax problem, you know, Jim Tressel would beat Michigan, you know, 9 out of 10 times. They'd win the Big Ten almost all the time. The BCS was a birthright. But you still had things that really bothered you. For me, it was the fact that there was a lot of cronyism that was allowed to go unchecked. You had Jim Bowman coaching the most underperforming offensive line in the Big Ten annually. He would turn 5 stars into 2 stars into undrafted free agents come NFL time. And when Urban showed up last year, he's a lot different from Tressel in how he communicates with the media. Tressel would tell you the same thing every year. and sometimes there was some truth to it with regard to personnel. Urban showed up and said, we literally have no offensive tackles on this team. Jim Bowman likes to recruit just like big fat guys and then teach them to play center, left guard, right guard, and both tackle positions. Urban showed up, took a senior who had played tight end, Reed Fragel, and made him a tackle, and then started shifting players around the roster to, just to put together an offensive line. And by the seventh game of the season, it was easily the best offensive line in the Big Ten.
Wow.
With total patchwork, guys playing out of position, really two true linemen, Lindsley and Jack Niehort, that didn't have to move positions, and still no depth. That, to me, is what encourages me going into spring ball. It doesn't matter how weak or how thin a certain position is. The offensive line was just so bad. I thought, you know, the idea of going 12-0, the schedule would have to be really bad in order for that to happen, and it was. But by the end of the year, the offensive line was good against anyone. It didn't matter. They held their own against Michigan and Wisconsin near the end of the season. They did well against Penn State. And the other part of the roster that really was atrocious was at linebacker. And you know, in the middle of the season, they took Zach Boren, just like they moved Reed Fragel from tight end to tackle. They took Zach Boren as a senior fullback who hadn't played defense since high school. And all of a sudden, over the course of 1 week, he was starting at middle linebacker, and he was good. And by the end of the season, the linebacking core was competent. It wasn't as dominating as the offensive line was, but they were able to take what they had, what they inherited, and they went 12-0, and they actually you saw visceral improvement from week to week, and that's what encourages me. What keeps me up at night is going undefeated two seasons in a row. It just didn't happen. And you start to anticipate the inevitable feeling of a loss. And it's a really tough loss. It's been a while, right? So Ohio State went 6-7 in that transitional year between Tressel and Urban Meyer. So after those losses started piling up, you started getting used to losing. Before that, you got like one or two losses a year for a decade, essentially. And those are the losses. I think it's been several years. So you start to wonder, something's got to give. Urban Meyer has pretty good success in his second year anywhere. He went 9-3 at Bowling Green. He went undefeated at Utah. And, he beat Ohio State pretty badly in the BCS title game his second year with Ron Zook players. This is his second year at Ohio State. He already went 12-0. I'm already nervous. It's the end of January.
All right, we'll go to the leaders division, of course. Ohio State, not just a prohibitive favorite within their division, but in the conference itself. But the leaders division is one in which Kevin Wilson is the dean of coaches within the division now after all the coaching changes. Which team, and I'm assuming at the top it's probably Penn State and Wisconsin below Ohio State, but which team do you feel like between those two teams, between the Nittany Lions and the Badgers, do you feel will take maybe a bigger jump in 2013?
A bigger jump forward? It's like hopscotch jumps. I don't think Penn State is... I think the atrophy for Penn State is coming, but I don't think it's going to be... I think Bill O'Brien's too good of a coach. I think that the roster was actually pretty decent. And one thing I was looking at over the last couple of weeks, Penn State's recruiting is really weird. They have under Paterno, who was, I think everyone agrees, was checked out for the last several years from a recruiting standpoint. But they would have some really good classes, and then they would have some classes where they'd get a guy that, you know, chose Penn State over New Hampshire and like Elon. that's such a machine of a program. I think that if anything, it's just going to be a slight decline for them to the point where they've been sustained, you know, 7-5 seasons. Wisconsin is, you know, a wild card, obviously. They lost assistants, Brent Bielma left, but those of us who have been around the leaders division for a long time, like Kevin Wilson, all 20 minutes that he's been there, have always thought that Barry Alvarez is sort of the puppeteer behind that football program, despite being in the athletic director's chair. I think that they will, at worst hold serve, perhaps get better. I never thought much of Brent Bielma as a coach. The fact that he makes more than Michigan's coach now that he's in the SEC is kind of funny to me. So I think Wisconsin will take a bigger step forward than Penn State takes backward. But because of Kevin Wilson, I think Indiana starts to make a pretty big step. They're actually recruiting as well as anyone but Ohio State from a from the standpoint of what their baseline originally was. I think they have, they actually have a handful of 3 and almost 4-star guys, coming into Bloomington, and that just doesn't happen. They usually get projects and, kids from Ohio that might not have the grades to get through Ohio State, and their football department has a leeway to do so. So I think they move up. Tim Beckman, as we were talking about before, had a pretty rough year. I think it looked worse than it looked this year. I think they'll come back around. The Big Ten probably couldn't get much worse than it was this year. I think everyone's going to take a step up, with Penn State taking a very slight step back in the leaders' division.
Yeah, and you talk about Illinois, and I was thinking about this before we called you up, Ramsey. Hypothetical point spread. Let's say Iowa and Illinois meet on a neutral field. Iowa minus like 4.5? Does that feel about? Do you give Iowa the nod there? I think you almost have to, right?
Iowa, Illinois, and a neutral field, 4.5. I'd put the over at like 6.
Oh my god.
that sounds about right. It depends. If Illinois shows up just as the Colonels.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Then Iowa probably wins. But if they put on like Central Michigan uniforms, Illinois straight up.
I think Iowa was just almost far worse than their record. I watched some of those games down the stretch, and it amazes me that Kirk Ferentz continues to be rumored for NFL jobs. Not only that, but he continues to be employed at Iowa. Does he have pictures of someone important?
You start looking at the third and fourth page of his resume, of his CV, and you see the history of the coaches he's coached with, his success as a coordinator, and his immediate success at Iowa coming in after the Hayden Fry era sort of bottomed out. Ohio State won the national title in 2002. Iowa tied them for the Big Ten that year. They didn't play. And they went and got annihilated by USC in the Orange Bowl, but he turned that program around pretty fast, and they sustained some success despite not having the organizational systemic advantages that you see, in Ann Arbor and in Columbus. You start to wonder if there's complacency. There's obviously the cronyism that Tressel brought to Columbus is a little bit more overt in Iowa, where you start seeing, people named Ferentz in the department. I mean, there were several Tressels at the Woody Hayes Athletic Complex. You see that at Iowa, but at the same time, it's without the Division III resumes that you saw with Tressel. I don't know what Ferentz is doing despite collecting awesome paychecks that I would love to have. Their trajectory does not look very good. Full disclosure, I lived in Iowa City for 6 years and have been to 50 games at Kinnick Stadium. I hate seeing them like this. I'd prefer that he get one of those closed-door ultimatums where he has to bring in some sort of different scheme or coordinator type of mandate. But I don't see them getting better anytime soon.
Yeah, and of course, it wasn't a great year for Iowa, as we kind of described there. Minnesota, another team that I think was scrappy at times, certainly went to a bowl game and fought pretty hard. But then you look at other teams in the Legends division. You've got Nebraska, you've got Michigan, Northwestern, Michigan State. Does this go along with the stigma when I say that I feel like all those teams have peaked? I don't know if Bo Pelini can get Nebraska to the next level. I don't know where Michigan's going. We've been led to believe anyway that they have talent coming in. Northwestern, okay. Michigan State, maybe unlucky this year, still half decent. But is it wrong to say that that's as high as some of those teams feel like they should go?
I was thinking about this week, and I wrote about it a little bit a couple days ago. There's a lot of crossroadsing going on, especially in the legend side of the Big Ten. I think Northwestern is clearly trending upward. I love their coaching. They play really sound, interesting, fast football. I was driving on New Year's Day and had the Mississippi State play-by-play going in my car, listening to their bowl game. And it was pretty funny. The announcers were just aghast at how fast Northwestern played and what their pace was like in their scheme. It was almost as though they had picked up like a Bazooka Joe, a comic of what Big Ten football is supposed to look like, and expected to see that. And Northwestern, basically, with really not nearly the same talent that Dan Mullen has, and blew them off the field for most of that game. Their trajectory is upward. Michigan would be next. Led to believe that they're recruiting well. They're definitely recruiting well. And they're recruiting very transparently with what Brady Hoke wants to do. They're, I think they've signed, or they haven't signed anyone yet because it's not for another week, but they have so many big, highly touted offensive linemen coming in, mostly guards, to really fill in what Hoke was left from Rich Rodriguez. They're going to become a power man ball, like Brian Cook likes to say, type of a power team. And they're getting really good players to do that with. I think they're going to be successful with it. The fact that they were able to do what they did with a hybrid role, like patchwork to a lesser degree of what Urban did with what he inherited, tells me that he's going to be pretty good at it. I've been a Brady Hoke fan for a while. I loved what he did at Ball State. I'm not going to waste your time telling you all about it because I don't think anyone cares, but he's a turnaround artist. He's a great coach. I hated him when he was the defensive line coach at Michigan because he created some of the worst villains of the 90s for me. But they're going to be good, and they're recruiting well. It's for me a matter of what happens on one particular Saturday. John Cooper was a pretty amazing coach and took Ohio State to heights that it needed to get back to. But one Saturday did him in, and it was really about game day coaching. And there was a bit of delicious irony with what happened last year in the Ohio State-Michigan game. In the second half, Al Borges, Michigan's offensive coordinator, called a very conservative, very predictable game, and it reminded me of especially like the 1996 Ohio State-Michigan game. Ohio State could have done whatever they wanted against Michigan, and they just, you know, clenched and tried to run out the clock with, you know, 35 minutes left in the game. Michigan basically did the same thing and lost. So I think Brady Hoke holistically is going to be really successful in Michigan, and they're trending upward. But this past November, I couldn't help but wonder, you know, it's that one Saturday that matters the most. What's going to happen with them? Now, beyond Northwestern and Michigan, you got a whole bunch of crossroads. The most damage that Brian Kelly has done at Notre Dame has really been East Lansing. Their recruiting has really fallen off since he got there. Brady Hoke has also been more successful in going after some of the players that Mark D'Antonio would get. And the hidden loss for Michigan State is Jim Tressel. You know, D'Antonio is a Tressel coach. A lot of the assistants at Ohio State are tight with the Michigan State assistants. They would clue Michigan State into players that Ohio State didn't have room for, like Le'Veon Bell. And they would basically hand those players to them. That's not happening anymore. So I think Michigan State is a bit of a decline. That doesn't mean that I don't think Mark D'Antonio is a good coach. But, you know, the brief amount of what you would consider success in East Lansing, they haven't handled that well. You're going to lose coordinators when you go, you have a 10-win season and you beat Georgia in a Capital One Bowl. You have to replace them with good coordinators. You have to recruit better. You have to maintain that kind of success. I don't think Michigan State has done that. They had 10 four-star players in their outgoing senior class. And I think they have 3 on the way in now. And I believe in recruiting rankings. I know that there's some inflation involved, but I think that's a pretty solid indicator that they're not going to be maintaining what they briefly had. Nebraska, same thing with Pelini. He's starting to have trouble in Youngstown. And when you're from Youngstown and you're having trouble recruiting Youngstown, that ain't good. I think that they had a really tough year. Obviously, they gave up over 60 points a bunch of times. One of those times I was there, it was pretty awesome because Ohio State was on the giving end of that. But it's, you know, this season is especially critical. And if getting to the Big Ten title game is great, but you can't lose by 100 points when you do that. And I don't think they're going to get back. So this is probably the biggest season you've had going into this year since you've been at Nebraska.
Well, that's an easy segue into another coach with a lot of Tressel experience, and he is the new coach of the one team we did not mention in the leaders division. Of course, Purdue hires Daryl Hazel away from Kent State, obviously a coach on the offensive side of the ball for Ohio State for a number of years, an assistant head coach for Jim Tressel. How do you think his makeup is for the Big Ten, for a Purdue job, a place that you can succeed if you have, it seems, a specific niche like they were able to have with their passing game for a number of years? But Purdue has appeared to have been a team more famous for the ACLs that tear and really talented defensive linemen that don't quite do enough to help the team become a perennial 8-9 win team like they used to be. How well is Daryl Hazel built to help Purdue take a leap forward?
I think he's built extremely well. He's one of my favorite Tressel assistants. I hated when he left, but you know, that was inevitable. The only coaches that didn't leave while Tressel was there were the cronies that couldn't get jobs elsewhere. So he was easily one of my favorite assistants. I think he's got two big problems at Purdue. One is Purdue, which is the cheapest athletic department in the Big Ten, and I don't think it's even close. Everyone likes to talk about Danny Hope's mustache and some of the stupid things he said, when he was coaching Purdue, but he wasn't really put in position to win. They don't spend nearly enough on assistants. The infrastructure isn't great. So that's the biggest thing going against them. I think Joe Tiller got past that by bringing basketball on grass to Purdue, and then that weird, that enigma that is the Purdue quarterback. They all seem to have good quarterbacks for whatever reason. Even their bad ones, like Curtis Painter, end up playing in the NFL for years. He was able to overcome that with scheme. I don't know what Hazel's going to do, but the second thing that's working against them is I personally just think that his coordinator hires have been terrible. He hired Jim Bowman from Boston College, who is, obviously came from Ohio State, and I think probably the worst coordinator in football today. And he hired John Shoup, who might be the second worst coordinator in football today. And they're on the same sideline, which I can't imagine what Shoup is going to do offensively behind a Bowman line. Like that almost sounds like the beginning of a three guys walk into a bar joke. Like how do you make that work? So I was higher on Hazel until he started hiring his coordinators, and then he compound that with Purdue's unwillingness to spend in this arms race, and you wonder where the 7-5 you can schedule a few South Dakota states and get to a ticket to the bowl, and sure, why not? But he's a good coach.
All right, and let's go back to a team we talked about before. You mentioned Wisconsin as a team, as a program that you expect to take a step forward with Gary Anderson. What was your reaction to that hire? Obviously, somebody not with Big Ten experience in the way a lot of people, like Daryl Hazel coming in as a new hire, have. He comes from Utah State. He has a defensive background, coming to a school perhaps more known for its offense. What are you specifically looking to see from him as a coach, from them as a team, I guess schematically and the way the program is run? What are you looking forward to about Wisconsin this fall?
I don't think they're going to deviate from what Wisconsin is known for. Their defense is always pretty good too. The offense, Monte Ball is a bit of an exception to that. You think about the morbidly obese running back who runs away from defensive ends and linebackers. I don't think they're going to change too much from that. They have to stop getting sixth year senior transfer quarterbacks. They need to start developing them like in a Daryl Bevel type of fashion on their own. I don't think that they're going to change from what brought Wisconsin back from oblivion in like 1992. I think they're going to maintain that. If for any reason other than how badly Rich Rodriguez scared everyone from trying to do something different at what's basically an institution. Wisconsin football is gonna run the same way that the whole Hayden Fry, the coaching tree, runs football. It's gonna be very fundamental. I really like this coach. It's gonna be hard not hitting a Wisconsin head coach after Bielema was there. He drove me a bit nuts. He's kind of you look at this elder statesman type of coaching league, and he really rubbed a lot of guys the wrong way. Especially with his comments about being, not wanting to be anything like the SEC and then, going to the SEC, like in the same calendar year. It was a fun villain to have. And I don't think we're going to have that anymore from Wisconsin, which means we're going to have to head elsewhere to find our villain. It's probably going to be Urban Meyer.
This is true. And I will ask this question because I feel like it's a reasonable one, especially after this off season and Bill O'Brien's name came up with NFL jobs, of course, from Penn State. Who is at their respective school longer, Urban Meyer or Bill O'Brien?
I think it's going to be, Urban Meyer. I'm trying to like, extricate any kind of Homer, sensibilities from me. I think, I understand what the health issue was. Was he lying about it? I know it was a bit of a misdiagnosed acid reflux, and he had some stress happening, and he made some lifestyle changes, and I know he's still working obnoxious hours, but I have a hard time seeing him. Well, I don't see him leaving for another job, but I have a hard time seeing him walk away the same way that he did before. Whereas it's a bit more uncertain with O'Brien. He already had those overtures.
Right.
And I don't believe he ever had any intention of leaving. I think that he was doing what any one of us would do if we had the leverage, making a little bit more money or you know, yep. getting a raise the fun way, which is being in demand. I don't see either one of them leaving for a while, unless, I don't know, O'Brien's dream job is maybe Belichick retires and the Patriots throw a whole bunch of money at him. But, you know, I don't see them leaving anytime soon, but if I had to choose which one to stay longer, I'd say Urban Meyer.
All right, and the big news sort of also of the offseason is the Big Ten has added, I don't know, 14 more teams. I don't know. They add Rutgers and Maryland. What is, in your mind, what is the business model? What is the temperature? What is the direction that the Big Ten is looking to go with these teams? It seems like it's a TV market addition situation. What is your sort of, now that you've had a few weeks to let it marinate, what is your reaction to Rutgers Big Ten team, Maryland Big Ten team?
I've never liked it. I'm one of those that I understand Nebraska being added, even though they're still a Big Eight team to me.
Yeah.
I never really subscribed to that. The Big 12 was still sort of unnatural. To me, it's an accounting exercise. They're looking at what they can charge for a basic tier Big Ten network play on cable vision on the various different, cable contracts throughout the Atlantic seaboard. And to me, it was just a matter of looking at the balance sheet at the expense of, you hate to use the T word tradition when talking about the Big Ten, but it violates, you know, much of this tapestry that defines Big Ten football. I mean, I've lived in Chicago, Iowa City. I went to Indiana and Bloomington. I went to Ohio State. I've lived on several of these campuses. I grew up going to all these different campuses for games. I've been to every stadium. I'd have to sit down and count it. I don't know what going to a Maryland game is going to be like. I live in New Jersey now. I don't know what going to Piscataway to see a Big Ten game. That to me is so foreign. That it's almost like you're calling it the Big Ten because technically it is the Big Ten. But, you know, we all know what it is. It's cable subscribers. It's something that Jim Delaney has been working on for a long time. I think he's deviated from that original intent that brought Penn State in, you know, 20 some years ago.
Right.
And to the degree that, you know, almost in the same capacity when they brought in Nebraska, it's not like the Omaha market brings a lot in the way of cable subscribers, more in terms of audience and name recognition. But Maryland and Rutgers to me sounds a bit like the consolation prize. You look with 1 week left in recruiting season, who some of these schools are going after to fill up their recruiting classes. They're not names that their fans were talking about, like even in November, December. They're names that just sort of showed up now. And when you talk about Maryland and Rutgers joining the Big Ten, to me it's kind of like how many strike-throughs on the list of candidates are there above those two that they reached the Scarlet Knights and the Terrapin? It's to me not in the best interest of the fan, more in the best interest of creating shareholder wealth in this nonprofit entity that is college football.
So what I think I'm hearing here is that you're not excited about playing a fifth-string quarterback in his home stadium?
No.
No.
I prefer my stadiums to be 80,000 or bigger too. That's something I'm uncomfortable around, you know, small amounts of people.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get you out of here on this. Michigan, of course, is Ohio State's rival. Michigan went through a bit of a downturn, as I'm sure you know, with Rich Rodriguez and that whole fiasco. Michigan certainly in a different place now than it's been for much of the last decade. Does it pain you to see Michigan seemingly trending somewhat upwards now? I mean, do you kind of silently root for Michigan to be that hated enemy that, oh, by the way, is a decent football team on the other side of the conference? Or are you the type that would just prefer Michigan to always be 0-12?
No, I get excited when they're doing well, because I like watching good Big Ten football. I like it when Michigan's good. When they got Derek Green verbal to them over the weekend, I was excited because they got their Tyrone Wheat, they got their big running back, and those guys have, you know, caused me a lot of pain, you know, throughout my life. But that's what Michigan football is for me. It's a big bunch of like just miserably angry offensive linemen plowing giant holes for huge running backs that are going to run for a lot of yardage. And then I like seeing Ohio State beat them, but I want them to be good. I went to all of the Rich Rodriguez Michigan Ohio State games, and they weren't. I mean, the second half, you're just sitting there, and it's quiet. And in Ann Arbor, there are like you can hear Ohio State fans chanting the OHIO chant, and there was a bit of fun to that, but it felt like you were violating one of the most sacred traditions of college football, which is this like painstaking, agonizing final Saturday of the season where everything matters, and Todd Beckman's coming in for Terrell Pryor in the third quarter to run up the score. It wasn't something that I wanted to look forward to again. I want, like this year, I knew it was going to be a good game, and it was. You want to see that kind of this huge matchup, and I want Michigan to be at its best, because the Big Ten is better when Michigan's at its best.
Sure. All right, again, check out Ramsey at 11warriors.com. Certainly head on over there. You guys do more than just football, by the way, if you're an Ohio State fan. I was listening to the podcast earlier talking about some basketball.
We are a holistic Ohio State outlet for Ohio State junkies. We pretty much cover everything.
That's right.
We're pretty good at football and basketball. That's probably our sweet spot.
Yeah, well, it's a great site. So, you guys do great work, and thanks for hopping on.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, Dan, check out Ramsey again over at 11warriors.com. You know, so much is made of the Michigan-Ohio State rivalry. I've always been curious to get that feedback from someone who roots for one of those two teams. Do you kind of silently root for the other team to do well? Because when they are top competition, it makes things more interesting?
Yeah.
Or do you just hate them so thoroughly that you never want to see them excel at any point in time?
Well, I think I might be a fair person to ask about that as somebody who roots for a team whose rival in a relative recent sort of past look behind, Washington went 0-12 a few years ago.
Sure.
And I got to say, it's not an ideal situation to see your rival do that. But to have that in your back pocket is hilarious.
To have that in the quiver, you're saying it's...
To have that in the quiver, in the holster.
Sure.
In the blowgun, blow dart. What are those called?
It's a blowgun.
It's a blowgun? Is it bamboo?
It can be bamboo. Some sort of reed, I think, is how they originally intended the blowgun. But yeah,
I feel like it's bamboo.
It should be bamboo.
I don't know where the blowgun originated.
Okay.
We need somebody to write in and give us a brief history of the blowgun.
Yeah.
In any case, it is great to have that, like, oh, you literally did not win a single contest in which you competed. Is a great, it's just something good to have in the arsenal. But, yeah, it's better when, for me as an Oregon fan, Washington is good, Oregon State is good. This year was very cool to see Oregon and Oregon State in the top 15. I like that. I like high-level football. It's not that fun to see, teams struggling anywhere. So, unless it's, Texas and USC, obviously. But,
sure.
Yeah, I think so. What do you think? As somebody who roots for a team without a country.
No, I think you need to. Thank you, by the way. I appreciate that. I think you need to root silently. Silently for the team to at least be interesting. Because if the team is interesting, and as Ramsey alluded, if the team's interesting and then you beat said team, that only makes you look better.
Sure.
Hit us up on the Twitter or send us an email at solidverbal@gmail.com. In the meantime, Daniel, you stay warm over there in the big NYC, and I'll try to do my part here, keeping my shoulder in place in beautiful Allentown, Pennsylvania. Thanks again for tuning in. Catch you all in a few days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.